We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
Prime Minister Donald Tusk has issued a stark warning about Ukraine's victory against Russia. Speaking in an interview, he said that Europe had entered its pre-war era and that war was a real threat to the continent.
Despite the fact that young people are more skeptical of the military than basically any previous generation.
Now, that news of Germany slipping into recession comes on the same day as a new report shows that the country's businesses are getting less innovative.
Coming up this week on Premium Multipolarity, the Atlanticists versus the Autonomists, the European Civil War coming soon to a bureaucracy near you.
It's long been a theme of this show that the continent is being slowly capsized by its long-term problems related to energy and productivity. We'll be picking through three news items that tell the short-term story of the continent's woes.
Then we'll be panning back to look at the dilemma Europe now faces. That between the Atlanticists, who want to shelter under America's aegis, but thereby have to toe the party line on geopolitics, and the Autonomists, who want a break for something genuinely multipolar, gaining their energy independence, but at sea in an increasingly dangerous world.
In Germany, the AfD and Sarah Wagenknecht are rising from either side of the political aisle. Meanwhile, as she gets closer to the French presidency, Marine Le Pen is kowtowing to the NATO line, and Giorgia Meloni's promised populist rule has been set back onto the Atlanticist's straight and narrow by the Italian presidency.
With constant talk of remilitarizing while the continent is broke, are we doomed to spend the next decade stuck in a world where all European citizens are compelled to pretend that our dear leaders are building an army that doesn't really exist?
Of course, this is the premium week, so we'll be prancing through this dog and pony show for free for 15 of those 65 minutes. After that, you're welcome to sign up to our Patreon. $5, pounds or euros. Cancel anytime.
This is Multipolarity, charting the rise of the new multipolar world order. I think it's starting to become clear that Europe is in quite serious trouble economically, not necessarily to the extent where we're going to see an immediate and sudden Great Depression style kind of 1930s hyperinflationary collapse. But as we've been saying for the thick end of a year now, Europe is facing a really unpleasant prospect of quite a grinding and serious deindustrialization process and a long period of stagnant economic growth. One of the data points that suggests this is true are the manufacturing PMIs. This week, global PMIs were released, and the Eurozone's PMIs were a part of that. And really, they were extremely bleak for the Eurozone and supported the long-term multipolarity podcast thesis that the EU would undergo a period of slow and grinding deindustrialization. And they even suggest, in my view, that there's a possibility that the EU decouples from the global growth trends and is just left behind, floundering and stagnant. So what are PMIs for the uninitiated? Basically, the easy way to think about PMIs is a survey of management in various sectors of the economy. So the manufacturing PMI will survey the purchasing managers within the manufacturing sector of a given economy. And based on that, they'll come up with a figure of sentiment. The key figure to remember within these is the number 50. Above 50, and it indicates expansion of that specific sector. Below 50, and it indicates contraction. So if you get like a number of 52, then it means that purchasing managers in that particular sector are feeling fairly confident. They're expecting growth. 48, and it's the other way around. And to give people an idea, during the COVID lockdown and during the very worst days of the 2008 Great Recession, when for a short time it really looked like the entire global economy was going to collapse. And obviously during the COVID lockdowns where literally nothing was being done, PMIs dropped to about 20, 25. So that's the kind of the lowest of the low, essentially. These are important numbers for, you know, in case people say, oh, this is just a survey. What does that mean? It sounds like a kind of political opinion poll and therefore doesn't mean much. Well, if you put PMI numbers on a chart and kind of and put on the same chart industrial production, so you have a line for manufacturing PI and a line for industrial production, they correlate very closely together. Like the manufacturing PMI gives you a very good idea about what industrial production is going to be in like over the same period, essentially. And because PMIs come out first, they tend to be seen as a very strong leading indicator for sectors of the economy. The March numbers for the Eurozone were really bad and really disappointing. They came in at 46.1 for March, which is a fair way below that 50 contraction expansion mark. This was lower than the consensus had expected. The consensus had expected that it to be quite a way below that, but not as bad as it was. The consensus expected 47, and it came in at 46, essentially. But what's worse, and you know, I would say even more concerning for the European economy, is that the rest of the world seems to be moving back into growth. So US PMI was 50.3, just above the watermark. Chinese was 50.8, a little bit farther, but still close to the watermark. And by the way, for those who don't trust official Chinese numbers, the independent Caixin number was 51.1, so again, above the watermark. The Indian number was 59.1, which is kind of commensurate with the fact that the Indian economy has grown at 7 or 8% a year these days. And even the Russian PMI is sanctioned and supposedly cut off from the world as it is, was 55.7. So it really seems that the world manufacturing sector seems quite buoyant at the minute, except for Europe. And Europe is getting worse. In fact, the organization that compiles this PMI said it was actually disheartening. The last few months, you know, it had still been below that 50 level, but it had been slowly improving. It was slowly moving closer toward the 50 mark, but now it's just gone back down again. And I think it's been quite crushing for this idea that perhaps the Eurozone economy was slowly recovering. So what does it mean? Well, as it shows, the Eurozone is falling behind the rest of the world and looks to me at least as if it's at risk of decoupling. And I think it also supports our thesis, Philip Pilkington, that Europe is undergoing a deindustrialization process, slow as that might be. I mean, manufacturing is simply not recovering, and it hasn't for some time. So I think these are pretty dire numbers, and I think they don't bode well for the European economy in the long run.
There's a funny thing with the whole deindustrialization narrative at the moment. Listeners of the show will know that it's, as I think you said, it's been a pretty much constant theme. I think it was actually one of the trends that probably gave rise to us deciding to do the podcast in the first place, because you and I were on Twitter saying this will so obviously happen. There was just widespread denial about it. And it was denial of the most irrational sort because, you know, it didn't even have an argument. I remember at the time, often if people are in denial about a very obvious bad thing that's going to happen, they come up with kind of a shabby argument that's not very convincing, but, you know, at least it kind of strings together and the sentence makes sense. Whereas in this case, I don't recall any argument being made in the face of the high energy costs. I think maybe people were saying LNG will take the pressure off. But of course, we said at the time it's 40% more expensive. So
that's exactly what people were saying. I remember, again, like you say, we kind of found each other arguing with the same people about the same thing on your Twitter threads, essentially, as I remember. And that was the argument, that LNG is going to take the slack, Europe isn't going to have an energy problem, it's going to have plenty of energy to use. But the question was, at what cost, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I'd almost not even qualify that as an argument because, you know, if you're making the case that this is a margins-based thing, you know, for profit margins in manufacturing, and you're saying LNG, and you can just quickly Google relative cost of LNG, and it tells you it's 40% more expensive just fundamentally because you have to compress it and ship it, I don't really count that as an argument. So, yeah, I guess that was the argument at the time. Anyway, that was back in the days of deindustrialization cope, as the kids would say. I don't think we're there anymore. What is interesting is that we're in a very strange place right now. You know, I just put in European deindustrialization into Google there, and I kind of pulled up, you know, the news tab, which would suggest to you, you know, how much it's being reported. There hasn't been much coverage of it. I mean, all of the articles up here, I mean, there's a Politico one from July saying Europe's economic engine is stalling, the deindustrialization of Germany. There's one from November of last year, Financial Times, Germany faces threat of creeping deindustrialization. One from December, from ISPE, Europe, the specter of deindustrialization. But, you know, those are like 3 months apart from one another. And it strikes me that, like, if deindustrialization is taking place, which all of these articles agree it is taking place, it should be the most pressing issue in Europe, and it should be dominating the European headlines so that, you know, something can be done about it. I mean, this is easily as bad, if not worse, a threat to Europe and the European economy as the sovereign debt crisis that happened in the wake of 2008. I think probably it started around 2011 with the pigs countries and all that. I mean, that would have got daily coverage. It was always discussed. It was on the tip of everyone's lips. And this isn't. And yet this is arguably a worse crisis in many ways. I found one article from 2 weeks ago, I guess, from Euractiv, that kind of European website, which is, you know, pretty widely respected in Brussels. Very, very strange. It says, you know, a specter is haunting Europe, the specter of deindustrialization. So it's in line with these articles that say, yeah, deindustrialization is happening. And then it just dives into these interviews with business leaders who are like, the regulatory burden's too high. You know, we need, we're facing, this is from an industry leader, the CEO of BASF, the German chemicals giant, Bruder Müller is his name. He says, oh, we're facing a tsunami of regulations and we just need to cut the regulations down. The author actually says himself, these are very strange arguments, given the fact that this is obviously driven by energy. But then the author kind of gets to it and says, quote, one often suspects that EU and business leaders are so focused on reducing companies' regulatory burden precisely because it is one of the few relevant factors that they could feasibly tackle. And then quotes Margaret Vestager, the EU's competition chief, who says that this is all an excuse for strengthening the single market. So these people are kind of, you know, they have nothing. They have absolutely nothing to say to this. And we're really getting to the point now. I was looking into some aspects of European energy policy at a more granular level for something I'm working on this week. And I really kind of, you know, they're still focused on hydrogen and all this wacko stuff. And the more that I read of these people, the more you're like, they're not serious people, actually, that are running Europe anymore. Whatever you thought of, you know, the generation that dealt with the debt crisis, I'm thinking kind of Wolfgang Schäuble, the kind of arch villain of Germany, the finance minister who, you know, put the shackles on Greece, and then, you know, the plucky hero in Tsipras or Yanis Varoufakis. We remember those days. Whatever you say about them, those people had a plan. Maybe you didn't like the plan, but they had a plan. And the current crop, I don't think, have a plan. I think we're facing an enormous competency crisis in Europe. I don't think that there's competency at any level in Europe. It appears to me that there's complete incompetency at the technocratic level. All they can think about is fashions, fads, green energy nonsense, basically, that doesn't make any difference to anything or is actively harmful. And then at the top level, it's a bunch of business people who don't have the spine, frankly, to say, you're crushing us under high energy costs. It's not sustainable. And so they go out and they, you know, with their little begging bowl, and they go, please give us a regulatory cut. And they know it won't make any difference. They can't honestly think that cutting regulations is going to offset higher energy costs. So I think it's a dual crisis. You've got this deindustrialization crisis driven by the energy, and you've got this extreme competency crisis at every level. I mentioned the media as well. As I've just said, you're getting one story on deindustrialization every 3 months, despite it being arguably the most pressing issue to face Europe, potentially since the European Union was formed.
I must admit, I have noticed that. I mean, I read, for my sins, I read a bit of kind of specialist press, things like, you know, Foreign Policy magazine, Foreign Affairs, which is the kind of the insider journal for the Washington foreign policy establishment. Things like BNE Intellinews, which, you know, looks at emerging markets, economies. And in that sort of, you know, in that sort of journal, in that sort of website, you do tend to see the occasional article about deindustrialization. Quite often it focuses on Germany. And you see this kind of like horrifying list of companies that's leaving, you know, like, and some, like you mentioned BASF before, you know, they're just shutting down a factory and leaving to go somewhere where the energy's cheaper. And you're kind of horrified at the kind of like the industries that are closing down. You had that first wave of industries that were kind of very highly energy intensive and were the first to go, and then like a second wave, things like chemicals. And you wonder how far it'll go before it kind of, you know, the bleeding stops. But you're right. I mean, this sort of thing hasn't seemed to penetrate the mainstream media. And you know, and insofar that it's discussed on social media, it again tends to be discussed through the prism of bugbears that people already had. So you'll get some people saying, it's the green agenda. You'll get business leaders saying, oh, we'd like, you know, less regulation. We'd like to cut worker protections and things like that. And people get caught up in these arguments. But in fact, and they forget, well, there were green policies before the cost of European energy skyrocketed 18 months ago. Europe was not the most regulatory light place in the world to do business before that as well. The common denominator here is the energy cost, essentially. And I think, in terms of deindustrialization, it's kind of well known to the point of being almost a cliche that Germany is the kind of the manufacturing powerhouse of Europe. And it does seem that the Eurozone PMI, manufacturing PMI that was so bad was driven by Germany, which returned an absolutely horrendous figure. It was actually 41.6, so really a mile below that break-even contraction expansion 50 watermark, 41.6. And, you know, I think it shows how Germany's really being hit hard by this. And, you know, if our deindustrialization thesis is right, it does suggest that that's exactly what's happening.
I guess I'll give one kind of bright light, which might be a slight suggestion for the future for countries who would prefer to have some actual serious leadership and act like grown-ups. So as you said, the German manufacturing PMI is currently at 41.6, absolutely grim reading, slightly up on the even grimmer reading of, I think, 38.8 was the low point in July. Well, there's actually a country next door to Germany, or not very far from Germany, that's Hungary, and the manufacturing PMI in Hungary in March is 52.3. It's expanding. Now, this is kind of interesting because Hungary, their main industry is to manufacture.
What is the main industry of Hungary? Why is that kind of interesting? As the energy crisis deepens and industrial output tumbles, whose solutions will Europe turn to keep its foreign policy lights on without a world-class army? In the end, who'll win out between the Atlanticists and the Autonomists? For another hour this week, the lads will be revealing the surprisingly straightforward answers to these tricky questions. If you're already a premium subscriber, simply check Patreon or your secret RSS feed for the full-length version of this episode. If not, well, it's $5, pounds or euros a month, and that price means you can also enjoy our growing back catalogue of premium eps, including such hits as How to Invade Iran, The Yimbys vs. Philip Pilkington, and Carlos Roa on How to Make It in the DC Foreign Policy Blob. You can cancel any time. For now, though, The show continues on the other side of the velvet rope.
And the higher end manufacturing components are done in Germany, but a good deal of it is outsourced.